Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to another night of the main show, which we call Spiritual Connections Radio. We do this show once a month. Recently, with the amount of guests that we've had, we've actually been going to the two first Mondays every month. But we don't normally do that. We usually are only on the first Monday of the month. But we had a special guest that we wanted to bring in this evening, so we're really excited to line up another show. If you want to find out more about this show and other shows, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I'm going to bring in my co-host, Pam. Are you there?
I am, Mark, and welcome everyone to the show. We have an amazing guest tonight who's been on our show several times before, and it's always just the most wonderful show. His name is Jerry Gavin, and he's an angelic channel, but not your run-of-the-mill angelic channel. He's a life coach as well and the author of a best-selling Hay House book called Messages from Margaret, currently translated into seven different languages. He also hosts a weekly radio show on his own on www.hayhouseradio.com and channels the angel Margaret live, answering callers' questions. Jerry also does worldwide private readings. So we're going to go to the show now, and I'd like to welcome Jerry Gavin.
Hey, thank you so much. It is a pleasure to be here.
Hey, Jerry, always great to have you on the show.
It's great to have
Thanks.
You.
Thanks.
We're picking up an echo, Jerry. Are you close to your computer?
I am not, actually. I'm on a cell phone, so my connection is pretty clear, but I don't hear the echo anymore.
Okay, I don't hear it either. It's gone. Good.
Okay, how about now? Can you hear it now?
No. Yeah.
Nope.
So let me give out the phone number, and we'll kind of queue up for what we're going to do on the half hour and kind of set that up. So Jerry's going to talk about it a little bit more in a second, just to kind of just feed into what we're going to be doing on the half hour. But the phone number is going to be 646-716-9663. So make sure to write that down. That's 646-716-9663. And what Jerry is going to be doing on the half hour is that he's going to be taking callers, and people are going to be able to ask questions, and he is actually going to answer those questions directly channeling a angel called Margaret. So if you want to just expand on that for a second, Jerry.
Sure. So I started to channel an angel by the name of Margaret. Gee, I guess it's almost 25 years ago now that it first began. I want to kind of give you guys the Reader's Digest version of the story, because I know we've talked about it so many times, but I was not by any means someone who grew up having any type of psychic abilities, or actually kind of not a believer in the paranormal, and wound up moving into a house that was incredibly, incredibly haunted. And the process of trying to clear those spirits out of that house led me to learn more and more about energy, more and more about the way the spiritual realm works, how it all kind of interconnects with our energy. And that wound up leading me into the world of shamanism and studying shamanism, and which eventually brought me to the point of communicating with spirit guides and power animals, and finally with angels. And the angel who came to me to speak to me identified herself as Margaret. And she has this really, really unique gift, if you will, if I could say it that way, in that what she is just so incredible at doing is offering the most amazing down-to-earth angelic advice. And she did so back in 2012, 2010 to 2012, she asked me to write a book that was called Messages from Margaret, which was a book that was geared towards helping to alleviate or at least reduce the level of fear in the world by helping people to understand how immensely powerful we really are. How incredible we truly are, and how this body that we're in is just only a small part of what we are, what you know, everything that we are. So it's been an amazing experience to channel her and to do this. And I've been channeling her, as I mentioned, for the last 20 years. I had done it primarily in the form of letter writing, in the form of automatic writing, where someone would ask questions and I would, you know, write a letter to Margaret and then write a letter back. And it was only when in 2012, and I really kind of owe this to Reed Tracy, who is the CEO of Hay House. Reed, on the day that the book had come out, I was supposed to be interviewed for a Hay House radio program to talk about the book, and he asked me what I was going to do, and I told him, you know, I was going to talk about the book and talk about Margaret, and he said, well, what about Margaret? What about letting Margaret talk? And I said, well, you know, Reed, I don't really do that live. I don't channel her live. I do it usually through letters. And he said, well, try, you know, see what happens. And that was really the birth of it. On that one show, I started to channel Margaret live and take callers' questions, and that gave birth to the Hay House radio program, which incidentally is just now in the month of March just going into its second year, which I'm super, super excited about. We're 2 years on the air, and just amazing with callers all from all over the world who have been asking for Margaret's guidance and expertise. So, you know, it's just been an amazing experience.
That's excellent. Thank you for that great introduction. So for everybody that's listening, if you want to ask an angel directly a question, this is your opportunity. So make sure to dial in. We'll start taking callers in the queue in about 15, 20 minutes, and then we'll actually start being on the air with everybody answering questions on the half hour after the break. So with that, Pam, do you have a question? Go ahead.
I do. I'm looking at the little bio that you sent us, Jerry. And it says, in the show, Jerry gives listeners a sneak peek about what were some of the most universal questions
right.
that came up in the writing of the book. And that intrigued me. I was going to ask you about the universal questions.
Well, you know, it's a really interesting thing. So the current book that I'm working on, I could honestly say feverishly working on, because the due date for the book is March 30th. So I'm really kind of totally thrown into it at this point. The new book is called If You Could Talk to an Angel. And the premise behind the book and what has always come up in the last 20 years of doing readings has been the thought of, if you could talk to an angel, if you had the opportunity to sit down in your living room and ask an angel some of the most pressing questions that you've always wondered about. Because we all have those kinds of questions. We all have those kind of bigger than life questions. So we're not talking about the questions like, I just don't know where I left my keys. You know, it's not that type of thing. We're talking about kind of the bigger questions, the things that, you know, that we really would like to know about, you know, questions about, like, what is the true nature of the soul? You know, what happens when you die? You know, do you really go to another place? You know, what occurs during that situation? Why is it that some people get sick and other people don't get sick? You know, there's amazing numbers of questions that have come up during the course of this process. And one of the things that became very exciting. So the book initially started out with the thought of speaking about Margaret channeling information on what have been the most asked questions in the past 20 years. And then we expanded it a bit, and we expanded it to say, okay, let's open it to the radio listeners, the Hay House radio listeners, and other people, as I've been doing programs, to ask them, if you had a burning question, if you had that chance to sit down in your living room with an angel, what would be the questions that you might want to ask? And as we did that, it gave rise to another couple of hundred questions that wound up coming in. And then Reed Tracy, again the CEO of Hay House, decided, why don't we take it one step further and actually reach out to fellow Hay House authors and see if they had a chance to talk to an angel, if they had the chance to sit down with Margaret, what would they ask? And it was amazing. I did not expect a response of this nature. There are close to 20 authors who actually responded to the idea and wrote questions, and amazing people. People like John Holland and Pam Grout, who's the best-selling author of E Squared and E Cubed. Chris Carr, that you guys might know, who was an amazing cancer survivor who has been writing wonderful books teaching people how to change their energy and change their diets. Colette Baron-Reed and Mike Dooley, Anita Mirjani, Noah St. John, Ariel Ford, Sonia Chiquette, Denise Lynn, people like this who were all just jumping, you know, at the opportunity to ask questions and to find out what was actually going on. And what was amazing to me is that so many of the authors who asked questions, where I thought that the questions would, you know, be more kind of professional, if you will, they were so much more personal and really deeply personal in asking about, you know, situations that they have always personally wondered about. So, again, it ran the gamut. We had questions that came up about health, about sex, about relationships, about family, about friends, about the nature of the soul, about what happens when Margaret often has spoken about soul retrieval. What happens when you lose soul pieces? One of the interesting questions that I'm actually just working on today, which was one that I really wondered so much about, was the question of do we plan? Is our life planned? You know, do we kind of make the decisions of what we're going to do? Is there a script, so to speak, about what our life is set to be, or is it just all random? And how does that come to be? Let me answer that one. I guess just since we're working on it, if you guys don't mind, that was such a fascinating question to me, and this is kind of the nature of the question. So what Margaret explained, and I just love this explanation, she said, when we're in our soul form, which is incredibly huge, so our souls are just immense, so much more immense than we would ever imagine them to be, and we take pieces of our soul's energy and we place it into physical forms, some type of a form that is actually going to start out small and grow. And in the process of that happening, we will expand the energy of the soul just on the basis of the growing of the physicality. But in addition, we'll expand the energy of the soul by the circumstances and conditions that we're placed in, and the opportunities then to respond to those situations in a way of love and compassion, or through a way of fear. And depending upon what we decide, we'll either expand or contract that energy. But she said this really interesting thing. She said, when we come into this lifetime, she used the analogy of a play, and she said, essentially, every single person who exists is the primary character. They are the star of their life story. But every other person in their life are the supporting actors. And so when you think about that, here you have a world full of people where you're the supporting actor in all the other lives that you're involved with, but you're also the star, the lead, the person that is right there in your story. And she said, what we do is we essentially create the backstory before we're born. We make the decision for the backstory by making the decision of, this is the family I will come to. This is the background of what their story is. This is what the father experienced. This is what the mother experienced. This is the geographic area that they're in. This is the economic situation that they're in. So this all becomes the backstory of what we decide to come into. But what she says is that once that takes place, once we enter a lifetime, from that point on, everything else is improvisation. Everything else is totally happening on the basis of free will. And what we decide to do, how we decide, how we react to the situations of what we will feel. So we basically are involved in a world of, you know, a billion or so improvisational actors who have come into these stories that have sort of been pre-created, but then have this amazing free will that allow us to take this script, if you will, in many, many different directions. And I loved how she described that, because it made a lot of sense in a lot of different ways. You know, I had heard people talk about the fact that we choose our parents, and, you know, we choose the places that we come to. And interestingly enough, she said, we may wonder, well, why did we in this particular lifetime choose to come to this type of a life, to this type of a family? And she said, you know, what you don't realize is that this is probably not the only place you are in this given lifetime. You've probably placed your energy in many, many other different people to try to experience what your life is like in this country, in this place, in this social economic strata. And then as you are feeding that information back to your whole soul, or what we would call the higher self, that is just, it just keeps on absorbing information, sharing it with other souls, and expanding the universe. So it's a really, I thought that was just an amazingly interesting concept as to how it all works.
It is. That was a beautiful explanation. Thank you so much for relating that to us.
I've got a
question, Jerry, that maybe through the years of channeling Margaret, you can answer for me, or maybe on your own. It's this sort of issue I have with angels and spirit guides. You know, I'm a medium and I talk to the other side a lot, and my concept was always, what I picked up was always that an angel has never really been incarnated. An angel is like this pure loving energy, and a spirit guide has been incarnated and is there because they have more compassion for the drama, for the pain, the issues, and I've made this distinction very clearly in my work. However, I've heard so many people in the past, in my past, say, well, you know, an angel can be your spirit guide, or a spirit guide is an angel, and they mix it all up. Is it something that mixes up, or are they two completely different sorts of jobs?
Well, you know, from the things that she's explained to me, your interpretation would be correct. But the interesting thing is, it's not really about the nature of it being a job. It's more about just the energetic frequency of that level of creation. So what Margaret has described is that angels were the first level of creation. After the creator basically, you know, took this world, which was nothing but light, and brought it together to cause this amazing combustion that separated the light into the light and the darkness, the first level of creation were angels. And angels exist on this incredibly high vibratory level. And that angels, in conjunction then with the creator, created the next level of creation, which is that we call the souls, which is what we are, what we really are the souls. We are, in essence, the next level of creation, but rather than being angels who were created either from the light or created from the darkness, and who then created things in either of those manners. And by the way, I want to be distinct that when I'm talking about angels of darkness, I'm not talking about evil angels, you know. I think there's a lot of misconception about that if something is created in the darkness, it is necessarily something that is evil. What it is it's something that's absent light, and that gives you the knowledge then of what opposites are. So her explanation is that angels then are a very, very different frequency, and they are not incarnate beings. They're not souls who then aspire to the next level of an energetic frequency, which takes them to the level of being an angel. But in that description, she also then never alludes to the fact that angels are somehow better than souls. If anything, she says that angels have an amazing respect for souls because we make the determination to experience both experiences of darkness and light so that we can learn from and expand from, which means we experience tremendous pain, tremendous anguish. And so that is the difference between us at the soul level and then the essence of an angelic energy. Now, with a spirit guide, what she describes is that spirit guides are basically souls who have incarnated many, many different times and who have kind of learned to master in their level of incarnation, to master the ability to be a physical being that doesn't lose its connection to the higher self. So when you think of those beings, you think of beings like, you know, Gandhi, Mohammed, Jesus, Buddha, you know, people who kept that connection to a deeper sense of spirituality. And those are then the guides who will come in and who will help us on our soul level, you know, our incarnate soul level, to understand how to function in a better way. Sometimes, depending upon your religious belief system, you might also call these people saints, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they become guides who have lived through it, understood it, and are coming to be able to offer their advice in that particular way or in that particular arena. So that is
wow.
The understanding
that I get from it, so.
That's great. Oh,
that's
Mark,
great.
I'm going to turn this over to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, great questions, Pam. It's it's funny. Me and Pam are always so much on the same page. It's like I'll say, oh, I want a question, and you know, I want to ask a question, and then Pam asks it, and I'm like, oh, beautiful. So I guess something had to happen after 2 years of radio. So, you know, Jerry, you know, I've known you for a while, and I just love your work, and I know you've kind of been working way through, and you know, you do the show on the house and stuff like that. Why don't we take a minute, because we're going to be taking a break in a few minutes. Why don't we take a minute and talk about some of the different things you have coming up as far as events that people can see you at. I think we talked earlier about a new book. Let's, you know, how do we get our hands on that, and when's that going to be out, and you know, when is your radio show on, and how do people listen to it? So go ahead and give us the full tour here.
Well, thanks for that. I appreciate that. So the book's going to be a little while. I'm finishing the book at this point in the actual writing of it. It's slated to come out in February of next year. But what we're going to be doing over the course of the next several months, because there were so many questions that came up that obviously we can't get all of them into the book. So we're going to be using the Facebook Messages for Margaret Facebook page to be able to answer questions and keep it open to people who maybe didn't know about the book and want to ask things. So that's a great way to be able to do it. You can always also reach out to me at jerry@jerrygavin.com. My website is jerrygavin.com. So the radio show is called Messages for Margaret. It's on Hay House Radio, hayhouseradio.com. It airs live every Tuesday night, 3 o'clock Pacific and 6 p.m. on the East Coast. And all you need to do is just register, sign in to be able to hear the program. And it's really great. And Hangouts Radio also has so many other amazing, amazing people who are hosting different radio shows. So I do urge everybody just to check that out. Two events that I have coming up in April that I'm really excited about. One is at the end of April, the weekend of the 24th, 25th, 26th, I believe, and I'll be speaking on that Sunday, but that's out in Denver, Colorado, and it's the Hangouts I Can Do It event, which has about 20 different speakers who are going to be speaking throughout the weekend at different times. If you're going to be in the Denver area, please come to it. I can tell you that you won't be disappointed. It is always called, from people who attend it, they always refer to it as a really life-changing experience. And I would love if you could come to my event. I think it's 11 o'clock on Sunday, that particular weekend, and all you have to do is sign up in advance for it. So that's coming up that weekend in Denver, the 25th. Am I right on the dates? I think it's 24th, 25th, 26th. And then on the 10th and 11th and 12th, I'll be on the East Coast at the Mind, Body, Spirit Expo, which is in New Jersey, in Somerset, New Jersey. And I'll be speaking at that event on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. And what you do for that one, if you are living on the East Coast, tri-state area, you want to attend it, you just go to mindbodyspiritexpo.com. There's a page for tickets, and then when you click on the ticket page, scroll down, and you'll see all the speakers, and you can get tickets for my particular event. And there is a cost for the tickets, but it's kind of a great value because I'm going to be giving away a copy of the download of the Angels and Shamans Workshop, which is a way you can communicate with your own personal angel, to everybody who's in attendance. So that's actually worth twice the price of the ticket. And additionally, we're going to be giving away books at the event, some very limited edition copies of the very first Messages from Margaret that was the self-published book, and a whole bunch of other things. I'll be channeling Margaret live and taking questions from the group. So that's coming up the 10th, 11th, and 12th. I'll be speaking on the 11th, but I'm also going to have a booth there for the whole weekend, and I'm so psyched about that because it gives me a lot of time to meet people and talk to them and really get a chance to spend some time with folks. The other reason why this one's so exciting is, Mark, that's the place where you and I actually met back in 2012. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was remembering that's where we first met. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we first met there, and it was actually the place, too, where a number of synchronistic events. I introduced the book, Messages from Margaret, the self-published book, at that event. It was the first time I had ever gone in front of people to talk about it. I was a nervous wreck. I was talking over myself and trying to explain it, and oddly enough, there was someone at that event who wound up having me, Ariel and Shia Kane, wound up having me on their radio show. And coincidentally, a person who sells the international rights for Hay House happened to hear me on their radio show and got a hold of the book and loved it and brought it to the attention of Ree Tracy at Hay House. And that was how Hay House picked up the book. So none of it would have happened had it not been I can't say none of it would have happened, but I don't know how it would have happened, other than the fact that that particular weekend, these amazing synchronicities took place, and I met so many wonderful people, yourself certainly being one of them, and it was great. So, yeah, it was totally a life-changing experience for me, and I know for folks who will come to it, there are hundreds of booths, all types of vendors who are selling amazing things in the field of holistic health and other aspects, and I get to meet you, which is really great. I would love to have that chance to get to talk with you and sign your books and do stuff like that. So those are the two big events that are coming up in April. There are other things that are going to be coming up after April that, if you go to my site, you'll be able to see the updates on that.
Wow, very cool. Yeah, it was great meeting you. I remember going back to that time period at the conference, and it's just amazing to see you and get introduced to your material. So definitely feel that. So for people who are listening, I want to let you know you can find out more about Jerry and his link to his website and more about our show by going to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And I guess, you know, one of the questions that I had for you, Jerry, well, let's give out the phone number and let everybody know you can start calling in if you want to get a reading from Margaret. That's going to be 646-716-9663. And if you actually go and are listening to the radio show, it's actually on the page where the show is listed. You'll actually see the phone number. So go ahead and call in, and we'll get you connected with an angel. So, Jerry, you know, one of the questions I have since the last interview that we did with you is, I'm just wondering, with this second book completed and the work that you've done on it, what really has been your really big aha as far as learning something from Margaret for the second book?
Oh, wow. That's a great question, Mark, because there have been so many big ahas. I think one of the biggest thing that I came to realize is the overall nature of what we're doing here, kind of coming away with an understanding of why we do all this. You know, that's always been one of my questions, like, why do we choose to do this? Why do we choose to come into these physical bodies that forget everything about what we came here to do, and we go through all of these struggles and desire to be accepted and relationship issues and everything else. And, you know, you as you start to become more involved in spirituality, you start to learn about the law of attraction, and you realize you have a greater responsibility for your life, but still there's this part of you that just thinks, like, well, what's the purpose? Like, why are we doing all this, you know? And her explanation of being able to elucidate that this is not, that this is really not real in a lot of ways, you know, that what we are experiencing and what we're struggling with and all the things that we are going through are experiences that we have created more or less as a method to expand our energy, and that we get so involved in them because we create stories, you know? And as we create stories, those stories can run away with us. And, you know, she used a really interesting analogy, and she said, how many times have we, as human beings, we all have a favorite movie, you know? That movie that we could watch over and over and over again. Every time it comes on TV, we'll watch it. We may have bought the DVD. And the interesting thing about that movie is that when we're watching it, even though we've seen it 100 times, if there's a part that's sad, the sadness will come up again. We know how it's going to end, and yet we become so engrossed in the story, you know, that we're emotionally involved in it every step of the way, even though we know how the story is going to end. And she said that's kind of the same situation that we are going through as human beings. We come into this lifetime, we've got this connection to our soul, we know that at the end we're going to go back and be a part of our soul again, so we know there's no such thing as death. We know all this is just experience, but we are so involved in the story that we forget it all. And we just live this story out with all the emotional entanglements and everything that's there. And her advice was, if you could start to think of life in that way, if you can start to realize that your life is a story, then you can start to think about well, if my life is a story, how do I really want the story to end? You know, how would I like the story to be? What's the story I would really like to write for myself? And then to begin the process of doing that, to begin to see yourself as this character, this main character, the star of your story, and trying to create that story around what it is that you would really like it to be. And the other great aha moment was that really the major purpose of our being here is to find a way to experience the greatest level of joy that we can in whatever the situation is that we encounter. And if we do that, that will lift our vibration to the point that we start to create that story that's, you know, kind of an incredible story.
Wow, that's powerful. Go ahead, Pam.
Well, I was actually going to ask Margaret something if I could. I know we don't have any callers yet, but
sure.
I was being selfish and thinking that I'd like her opinion on something. Is that
so
possible, Jim,
if
Jared?
You can do me a favor, let me just take a sip of water and just kind of get centered and bring this through. And you're welcome to ask whatever you guys would like to ask. Okay?
Thanks.
Hello, dear ones, and welcome. Mark and Pam, it is so good to have this opportunity to speak to you again. How are you tonight?
So well, thank you.
So how might I help you?
Well, I got a phone call this afternoon from a woman who has had a terrible situation with her house. She has, according to the story, several violent entities that are torturing her family and have been for many years. And she came across my name. Now, this is something that I've done before. But always, I can't say that I've had amazing success. I've helped. I've taken some of the pressure off, but I haven't completely fixed it. Now, I wanted to ask you what I can do or be or the energy vibration that I can hold that would best help these souls and the people that are living in this house.
That's a wonderful question. So let me explain that there are several levels of what are referred to very often as discarnate entities. There are those entities who die, who physically will leave their bodies at the time of death, but who don't cross over, because in their lifetime, their level of fear is such that they do not believe, and they have become so convinced that they are not worthy of love, that they exist within a certain realm. There are discarnate entities who desire to re-experience the body in a physical manner where they can relive addictions. So very often you'll have people who die as a result of an overdose, who die within the energy of that addiction and who seek to just relive the addiction. And what generally these entities will try to do is to locate places where there is the potential for a large level of fear that they can get control, or individuals who've had significant enough personal soul loss that they can somehow integrate their energy within those individuals. In the particular house that you're speaking of, there are entities who have lived in this house for a very, very long time. They died rather violent deaths or lived lives of substantial abuse during the course of the time that they were alive. And some of the energy that's there, Pam, is not even discarnate in the sense that it's energy from a human being that has died. It is actually soul peace energy that left during substantial abuse, that stayed locked in that space and time and in that particular place. But what it all holds in common is that those beings believe that they are the rightful owners of this particular location.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that everyone who is coming into this space are basically interlopers. They are people who have no right to be there because it was their home.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem that you're facing is that in most situations of spirit removal, in most situations of exorcism, it's done by command, you know? It's done by basically totally disrespecting the energy that is there right now, that's trying to hold on to the home, and saying again to this energy, these people who bought this home or who rented this apartment, who did so in a perfectly legal way, have a right to be here and you don't, and you have to get out. And that makes this energy dig in even deeper. Because
right.
In their mind, the energy is saying, what do you mean? This house was taken from me, you know? This house
mm-hmm.
was sold without my permission. This house was any number of different things that may have occurred. This house was built on the land that I owned. Any of those types of things. And what helps, Pam, is if you enter into the situation by actually creating a dialogue, a conversation that starts from the point of view of acknowledging the spiritual entity's concept of having a stake in the soul, and starting a conversation to explain, I know you feel this way. I know this is what your understanding is. I know how frustrating this must be for you to see family after family after family come through, but it's not going to help them to understand you if you're doing things to hurt them. Just like you did not want to be hurt, neither do they want to be hurt. Do you know what I mean? It is a very different type of a conversation than one normally has when you're trying to remove spirits. And what will happen very often is, I think you've probably even seen, is that when spirits are removed, they very often are only removed on a temporary basis.
Yes.
And really what's happening is they're not removed. They've just learned to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They are still there. They just realize they're kind of like, I hate to use this example, but it's a perfect example. Jerry had his two daughters, and when they were young, when they were teenagers, his oldest daughter was always the rebel, you know? She was always the one that was kind of in their face and always got into trouble because of it, you know? She spent so much time being grounded. So the younger daughter noticed her behavior and noticed what didn't happen and actually probably did more things that would have gotten her in trouble than the older daughter, but she simply learned not to talk about them, not to argue about them, and not to let herself get in trouble. So that's the same situation, Pam, you find yourself in very often spiritually, is that the spirits who are making a big fuss about wanting people out of the house start to realize, you know what, let's just be quiet. Maybe if we're quiet, we can coexist here for a while. But, you know, those are the spirits that are less inclined to be violent. But the spirits in this particular house have been violent in their lives. They have been violent in many different situations. You can also And it is a very effective thing. You can request on their behalf. They can request on their behalf that the Creator send a legion of angels to surround the house, to raise their vibration and to raise the vibration of the entities within the house, so that they are not in that situation of seeking to do the same type of damage as they have done before. It's all about vibrational energy. See, they are seeking to take the family's vibrational energy down to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they exist at the same vibration, then this family will feel fear in the deepest ways, you know?
Right.
And when they can do that, they can't inflict harm to them on a physical level if their vibration is higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They can only inflict physical harm if they're at the same vibrationary level. So those are the couple of things I would suggest, Pam. One is definitely to pray for and ask the Creator to send a legion of angels to protect the family and to raise the vibration of those entities that are within this area. Because while they don't feel the sense of confidence or love to move into the light, the more angelic presence there is, the more the vibration will be raised, and slowly but surely they will begin to feel a sense of worthiness to allow themselves to be reconnected with their souls.
Well, that's wonderful.
Does it make sense to you?
It does. And so basically, in my own sort of interpretation of what you said, the praying for the legion of angels is vitally important. And I deal with angels all the time. I'm always talking to my angels. So that's something that I can completely relate to. The other aspect of it is, instead of coming in like I'm throwing you out, you come in with respect and a vibration of love. I'm here to help you.
Exactly. You come in with the same energy you would like to be treated with. You
of
come
course.
In with the situation, the energy of love and compassion. Because think about it for a moment. If you come in and your energy is demanding and angry and basically coming from all vibrations that are lower than the vibration of love and compassion, then you are feeding that energy.
Mm-hmm.
You are actually making that energy stronger. And even in the state of a classic exorcism, in the state of a classic exorcism, it is all about the lack of the right of the individual who is within a home to be within that home. And I know it has been very well taught for many, many years that you have to stake your claim to the home. And I'm not saying not to do that, but I'm saying to do it with love and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as if you were to buy a car, and you were to find out that the car was a stolen car, and you've put all of your life savings into that car, and now someone comes along and says, well, that's my car. It was stolen from me.
Mm-hmm.
And it has no care or compassion for you. Even though you know that that person's right, you're going to resent them. If they come in acting like you're some terrible person because you bought this stolen car, you're going to resent it even though you know they're right and it was their car.
Yes.
You know? But you have been kind of duped, and that's so oftentimes spirits who inhabit a home feel the same way. Whether they're spirits who inhabited the home because it was a crack house and they died in that environment, or it's spirits who have inhabited a home for their entire lifetime and then just had some traumatic event cause them to stay.
I see. Now, there's a young girl in this house who's 14 years old who, according to her mother, has decided, has lived in fear of these entities for many years and has had all kinds of outrageous experiences with them. And she's decided recently that if she stops feeling any of it and she stops believing any of it, it will just stop for her. She's like shutting out her ability to touch that sensitivity, that connection with others. And the thought occurred to me that I really not only need to work with the souls, but I need to work with the family. Is there anything you can tell me to help her open up again and look again and not be afraid?
You know, it's an interesting thing because there is a part of her that is correct and a part of her that is intentionally causing soul loss in the process. She is correct in that the level of belief system that you have in a given thing will directly affect the level of fear that you will feel about it. For example, if you come from a culture who believes in voodoo, who believes in the casting of spells, you will be very susceptible to feeling the things that someone has done to you because you believe in that. If you are told someone has cast a spell on you to do this, and your belief is that someone has the power to do that, you will take on the manifestations of that spell. However, if you come from New York City and someone says to you, oh, so-and-so cast a spell on you, your likely reaction would be to say, yeah, whatever, you know, because you don't realize that. You don't buy into that particular belief system. So in that sense, what she's saying is true, because she is saying, if I don't believe in this, if I don't give it power, if I don't pay attention to it, then I will not have to deal with it. But the problem is that in her not believing in it, it's not that she's not afraid of it or doesn't believe in it. It's that she is essentially trying to turn off a part of her energy that is feeling this, you know? So it causes her to shut down feeling, you know? Because it's very hard to shut down particular feelings. And also to send away a portion of her soul, which is her sensitive, empathic self, in order to be able to experience this. So in advising you about her, I would say that, again, she is not in a bad place to not wish to believe in them. But she is only putting a Band-Aid on the wound, if I might figure a way of saying this that might make some sense, you know? Is there a reason, may I ask, why the family feels compelled to stay in this home?
That I don't know, because I haven't actually been to the home or spoken more than a few minutes to the owner of the home. So I don't have all the information as of yet, but I will tomorrow.
That is just always curious to me. In the situation of when Jerry first moved in to the house that he lived in that was haunted, it was because his friend and roommate at the time had just purchased the home. So every bit of her life savings had gone into it, and there were no other options at that point. You know, she couldn't just turn around and sell it, and she also felt very responsible then to sell it to someone else without knowing if they were going to come in and experience this as well. So it may be a similar financial situation for them, or it's a curious aspect as to why, with all of the suffering that's been going on, would there be a desire to stay?
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you so much for that answer. I know Mark probably has a question for you. So
I'll
turn it over to him for the moment.
Okay. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Oh, it's great to talk to you, Margaret. Thank you for all the great energy and love that you bring to all of us and your guidance.
You are so welcome. So how can I help you today?
I have a question that a lot of us in the spiritual area have been talking about for about 6 months now, and that is there's a lot of people who basically want to quit their day jobs and become spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they want to become, you know, they want to quit their day jobs and they want to, you know, they want to go out and do readings. They want to go out and, you know, they want to do healing and they, you know, they feel guided that they should be doing some type of spiritual work. And I think just in conversations from my understanding of this, I think the sad part of it is a lot of these people are already doing a great amount of light work on the planet already. They do amazing things of helping people. That goes beyond anything they could do by actually getting into, quote-unquote, a spiritual career.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question I have for you is, you know, how does an individual really determine if they're meant to really just do their spiritual work through the current job they have, or if they should be guided into doing something like going off and, you know, hanging their sign and becoming an angel reader or doing something that's specifically within a spiritual or healing modality?
Wow, that is a wonderful question. And in many, many layers of complication that become a part of it, but I will try to answer that as simply as possible. I think the first part that creates complication for people is that we don't understand that spirituality and your humanness, your being a human, go hand in hand. So that if you are coming from a place of love and compassion in anything you do, whether you are a person who works at McDonald's or a person who is working with a major airline or a person who is heading a charity to bring water all over the world, you have the ability in any of those positions to touch people's lives by bringing that energy into the job that you're doing. So if you bring the energy of love and compassion into whatever position it is, you are doing a majorly wonderful job. As you were saying, that people may not realize they are changing the world already. The question you speak of is more so that people are finding that the jobs that they're doing are not self-fulfilling. You know, they are not filling their sense of self in that they don't see themselves doing things where they can get that firsthand, more immediate gratification of knowing that they have done something to change life, something to change the planet, something that is having an impact on people. And in turn, giving them a good feeling in doing it. And that kind of comes back to what Jerry was talking about in our speaking about this in the book, is that the work that you do, you know, that which you do for earning a living, you know, and earning a living is nothing more but receiving receiving a demonstration of gratitude in money that's akin to something that makes you feel worthwhile. It's all about the experience of joy. So the thought that people have is that if I were to become a massage therapist, my life would be more joyful. If I were to become an angel reader, my life would be more joyful. And in many cases, that may be true, but it also, in many cases, brings about a tremendous amount of stress because there is not the belief that there is not scarcity in that career. So let's say, for example, if you are a stockbroker, it's very hard at times to make a switch to being an angel card reader from being a stockbroker, because in the world of stocks, you see abundance and you see all different stocks from all over the world and all different things. You don't see scarcity in that. But when you want to make the decision to move on to being an angel card reader, and you know that you can only do so many readings in a given course of a day, that creates scarcity. And that's part of what starts the worry then, because people start to worry about how will I lead an abundant life at the same time as doing this thing that I would really love to do, because their minds haven't yet expanded beyond the scarcity concept of doing this type of work. The belief is there's only a small group of people who are quote-unquote spiritual people, or there are only X number of hours in a day that I am going to be able to do this type of a job, and will I be able to get this much money to do it? Really, what stands in people's way is a lack of the belief in a lack of scarcity. And when you start to believe the fact that there is enough to go around, that begins to help you to know. What was that, Mark?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just going to go pick up a caller while you finish.
Okay. When you begin to recognize that there is not scarcity, and that if you truly believe in that which you desire to do, you'll find that it will lead you in the right direction then to do that thing that you would love to do, and to find a way to do it that will allow you to live within a lifestyle that you would love to have. But it also begins by being happy with what you currently do. If you're happy with what you currently do and you're joyful, that also helps you to draw to you an energy of joy around what you would like to do. Does that make sense, Mark? Does that answer the question?
It does, and thank you, Margaret. And with that, we have one caller before we head towards the end of the show and bring Jerry back on. So let me go ahead and bring Jackie on. Jackie, we'll just do a short question for this evening because we're at the end of the show.
Hi.
Jackie, you're on with
us.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Jackie. How can I help you?
Oh, it's just a general reading, whatever you pick up.
Well, Jackie, may I just... Usually when people will speak to me, they'll ask for specific questions of something they have a concern with so that I'm not infringing on your free will to do one thing or another. But I do want to say just one thing, because I know, as Mark said, they're coming to the close of the program. And the biggest thing, Jackie, I just want to share with you is about trust. For you, trust has always been a major issue. And it's not just trust in others, but trust in yourself and belief in yourself, and understanding that you are so capable of doing all the things in your life that you truly want to do. But you second think yourself so often. And that's part of having a bit of a, it's like a double-edged sword. You have a perfectionist end on the one hand and a a procrastinator's end on the other hand, if that makes sense to you. And the two go very well together. Part of why you become sometimes a procrastinator is because you are a perfectionist. And you underlyingly know that you're never going to get it perfect, so you keep putting off those things that you're afraid to do because you don't think they're going to turn out perfect. So I guess the most important thing I would love to bring to you is that it doesn't have to be perfect.
All right, thank you.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Jackie.
That was beautiful. And thank you, Margaret. I didn't get a chance to thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that insight with me.
You're very, very welcome. You're very welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Margaret. And if you could allow Jerry to step forward, we'll close out the show. Thank you.
Hey, Mark, how are you? Hey, Pam.
Hi, Jerry.
Good. That was beautiful. Thank you for your great gift.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really, really appreciate it and letting me have that time to channel Margaret as well.
It was great.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying it was wonderful, and I got a lot of information.
Good. I'm so glad.
Hey, Jerry, just a couple things in closing. I'd like to share with the audience a teaching that you gave me that I thought was so powerful, and you'll have to help me remember how exactly to say it. But you said sometimes the best way of creating something in our lives or our future has to do with asking the question.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It actually is it's a process called affirmations, and there's really a great, great book that was written about it by Noah St. John. It's called the Big Book of Affirmations, and Margaret kind of was very instrumental at bringing me that information and how I learned about it. But what she says is that our brains respond to questions all the time, and we are always asking our brains questions. So, for example, we're asking them questions like, why is there always more month than there is money? Why is it that I can't seem to attract the right lover? Why is it that no matter what I do, I can't seem to pass these tests? Or why can't I increase myself in my job? Or why can't I be more spiritual? So we're always asking questions about why we can't do things. And then what she explains is that our brain works basically like Google, and it then looks up every situation in our life to prove the theory of that question. Because it thinks that's what you're asking it to do. So when you say, why is there always more month than there is money, it will show you all the reasons why you've never earned enough money. And then internally, you take in that energy, you know, because this is all done subconsciously, and you believe that. So her switch on that is to ask the question of, why is it so easy for me to do this thing? Why is it so easy for me to earn all the money that I need to earn? Why is it so easy? And even more specific, if you need $2,000 a month to save, then why is it so easy for me to earn $3,000 a month? So that your brain starts to look for successes that you've had, reasons why this particular thing should be easy, and helping you to discover that. And then what it does is, once your brain does that, it begins to create that energy around you, you know, which then works within the law of attraction to attract those circumstances to you. And it's a really, the thing that's the most amazing about doing that is how quickly, and Mark, I know you and I have talked about this for you, how quickly when you do that, you start to notice things shift, you know?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how fast they shift, just because you're asking the right questions. And it makes sense, because you can't get the right answers if you don't ask the right questions, you know, in anything in life.
Very, very cool. Thank you for sharing that with everybody. Why don't you go ahead and give out your website so everybody can find out about the Denver event and also your radio show on Hay House and your Mind, Body, Spirit Expo event that's coming up. So just your website.
You can go to jerrygavin.com. That's Jerry with a G, GerryGavin.com.
Oh, it's always great to have you on the show, Jerry. Thanks a lot. And Pam, thank you.
Oh, thank you. And Jerry, it was wonderful. I enjoyed it so much. Again, as always.
It was a pleasure talking to you guys as well. Take care now.
Okay. Good night, everybody. You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. You can find us on the internet at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.